listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, September 23rd. My name is Michael Kelly and I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, Michael. I'm glad to be here. As always.
As always, glad to join you.
As always. And we're now into autumn.
We are.
So it is so. That's awesome.
Well, welcome to those joining us live as well as to those listening to the archives. The Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit as well as to explore science and spirituality. Now, as always, we're going to begin with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. And those are: 1. Do no harm, do right. 2. We believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3. We believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4. We are all equal, one planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5. We recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6. We are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will creates self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. So, tonight, we're going to have a bit more of a free-ranging discussion, kind of like we did last week. It was such an enjoyable time, such a great conversation and discussion that I got to have with you, Dr. Hunter.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
And so I think we're going to do a bit of the same. So, you know, we have some things we're going to start out with, but if you have anything that you'd like to discuss, go ahead and throw it in chat and we'll sit on the air and we'll discuss it. But you're right, it is fall, new season.
Mm-hmm.
With the pumpkin spice lattes coming and Halloween, it's a wonderful time of year.
I love it.
It is. And we just had an equinox, did we not?
Yesterday.
Ah.
It was nice. So. First day of autumn, and honestly, this is my favorite time of year. I love the colors, you know. Mm. I like the smell of autumn. I love the spring too, but autumn, I'm an autumn baby anyway, but it's just a fresh, you know, kind of harvest and, you know, canning. I made salsa with my grandkids not long ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a great time. And of course, I'm not in any way minimizing, you know, challenges that people are experiencing, whether it's fires or floods or, you know, all these horrific things that are happening in various areas of the world. But mm-hmm. It is, generally speaking, I think, an optimistic time. I think. That's my feeling about it.
Well, just like you said, it's the time of harvest. It's when the bounty's coming in. You're having those celebrations and festivals before winter and the cold comes. You know, the weather's starting to change. So you get out of the heat of summer. And, you know, this is going to tie into kind of our first topic that we're going to discuss. And, you know, that is the human animal and nature versus nurture. And we're already talking about the changing season in fall, and you said it's your favorite season, and you said that you're a fall baby. So, you know, it's that that nurture aspect, I think, that you've had so many wonderful associations with the season and with, you know, the holiday, with, you know, the festivities, with the colors, the changing of the leaves. And I think that's a big part of our existence as the human animals, the association we make with things and the memories that we have from those moments. So you had mentioned...
Hence nurture.
Yes. The nurture aspect of that duality.
Yes.
So, you know, you had mentioned that you're a fall baby and you love fall. I was a July baby and I absolutely hate the summer. But
oh, interesting.
But I've always loved the winter. I love what a lot of people consider gloomy days. I love...
Well, wait. Stop. You're talking about a Florida winter.
No, I'm talking about South Dakota, you know, negative 22 degrees Fahrenheit.
I just wanted a clarification there.
Admittedly, I love Florida winters as well. You get away from the humidity, you get some cooler weather. But no, yeah. I have such fond memories of the times I spent at home with, you know, cozy, warm inside, you know, snowy blizzard outside. You know, snow days, home from school, the whole family's bundled together. And even though it would be dark and gloomy outside, I had, you know, so many of these events where it was just such a good feeling with my family that I have grown to associate, you know, rainy days or, you know, overcast days or even, you know, blizzard snow days. I associate those with, you know, feelings of warmth and coziness and those loving kind of things that you had from the family. So while a lot of people are by nature, by the, being the human animal, geared towards, you know, loving sunshine, and not that I don't like it, but, you know, loving sunshine and, you know, hating gloomy rainy days and things like that, the nurture of those experiences of being introduced to that stimuli, it, you know, gave me a perspective on winter, and it gave me that kind of association, just like you had with fall.
I totally agree with you, and that is the nurturing element of us, and we do tend to do this. And I think we can even take it a step, you know, further to talk about conditioning, because it's not just you nurturing yourself, then it's also how others have conditioned you to appreciate that. We're conditioned by our environment.
Oh, that's such a great point.
So that's also the nurturing element. You know, I think that nature is, of course, in the courses, it's Dr. Kelly has certainly written about it extensively in there, and I can't remember which course off the top of my head, unless you can. But the nature versus nurture, the aspects to it. So just to be clear, nature is, think of it as the hardwiring, you know, of what someone's nature is. So let's just take an individual. Your nature is your genetic disposition. I'm going to include like your spiritual connection as an individual, and so that's your nature, because that is a hardwiring. Not just nature in the air, trees, water, and so on, but it's what's the nature of that animal? What is those basic tendencies? And then what happens is how that individual or animal or garden is nurtured. So it's kind of that, not kind of, it's that what it doesn't change in nature, I think. But you know what I'm saying. And then we nurture it to have an expression. That's kind of how I simply put it.
Well, see, that's an interesting take. And I would definitely defer to your, you know, expertise on the matter. But going into it, I was thinking back to the nine principles. And principle number six, we are physical and spiritual beings. And, of course, consciousness survives death of the physical body, but that duality of spiritual and physical, I would think, would the spirit, well, I guess I see how you were saying it. I was thinking more of the term of, you know, perhaps the, in terms of reincarnation, you know, the spirit that continues from life to life as the culmination of experiences being kind of the nurture side of that that goes into
it. Well, I believe that, but then that's a nurtured thought. So we can argue that, and again, it's how we perceive it to be. And this is where it kind of gets, in some ways, argumentative, right? Because we can say, I believe that there's some kind of universal force or energy that bonds with a human genetics to create a new mind or experience, right? But yeah. That may not be what someone else thinks. Mm-hmm. So again, that's a perception. But the one thing I will have to really introduce here right now is what Dr. Kelly would also say, the human universals, which we all laugh, we all cry, you know, and we all have, you know, emotions, you know, that kind of thing. So
that aspect being the human animal.
Exactly, and that's in the nature. That's the nature of it. Mm-hmm. And I think science can now prove in epigenetics 14 generations of emotional memory from your family, you know, that you have stored in your cells. And I think those, it's nature, but then what part of that is nurtured to remember itself?
Yeah.
How does a woman know how to give birth?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or an animal know how to take care of its young. It's in the genetics.
Exactly.
And it's in that genetic memory. So again, those are universals that we can consider. And then the nurturing part is how we condition ourselves and what we like to believe. But I think it can be nature could be argued as a lot of nurturing.
Well,
that's what's interesting to me about this topic.
It is, and I think that everybody can agree that it's a balance of the two. And I completely agree with you on the fact that one influences the other. You know, there's a balance that goes, you know, and there's a connection between the two.
Mm.
Nurturing behavior influences biological nature, and vice versa. Of course, nature is, you know, a little bit more powerful in terms of, you know, we're human beings, therefore we have a set of instincts that are native to us as the human animal. But Wendy said in chat, nature via nurture, which is kind of, a way that those affect one another. And I think it's fascinating. My favorite, you know, nature versus nurture kind of discussion, and how you can look at how behavior affects evolutionary development, is in how dogs have developed from the gray wolf.
Mm.
And they've done fascinating experiments in Siberia, I believe, with the gray fox. And it's been going on for decades, since the Soviet Union. And they found that they took a large, you know, population of foxes that were in captivity. They would go up to a cage. A fox that would respond in a friendly manner towards the human would be bred with other foxes that showed the same behavior. Over a span of several decades and many generations, even though the genetics hadn't changed at all, the physical characteristics began to change. The cranium began to become a little bit flatter on the front and a little bit higher, kind of resembling that of a dog, and their snout actually started to become shorter. So you could see that through behavior, the evolutionary biology, the nature was changing, and they were becoming more dog-like.
That is fascinating. There's an adapting to the environment, is what you're saying, and how we kind of nurture genetics.
Well, exactly, in the sense that there was no new DNA being entered, and it wasn't long enough for, you know, random mutation to have an impact on the evolutionary arc. So you could see that just behavioral trends alone would have a direct impact on the physical evolution or the physical, you know, reproduction process of that. That those physical characteristics would change in such a short amount of time is remarkable. But
well, I think the same could be said then of human beings, and migrations and moving around, in that, well, truth be known, we all come from Africa.
Of course.
Apparently. And so we have pigment adjustments and just so many different elements of ourselves that adapted as we moved around. So you'd kind of have to change.
Yeah.
It is fascinating. So the argument being, you know, nature via nurture is true.
Yeah. And there's always going to be a balance of the two. Both are true, you know, and yeah. Fran had made a great point, too. She said nature equals hardware, nurture equals software, which reminds me of something that I first heard from my father, although I can't recall the original source of this analogy. But to look at human awareness, our consciousness, the lessons that we learn, the sum total of our spirit, you can look at it through many different ways of basically a person using a computer. Just like Fran said, the hardware is the nurture. It's our biology. It's what we're physically able to do. Human beings can't fly on our own. We just don't have that physical capability. We have certain things that are kind of programmed into us. That's the hardware. The software, the lessons, the experiences that we have in life, the lessons that are both, you know, consciously learned and taught to ourselves and that subconsciously are learned through conditioning, just like you had mentioned earlier, that would be the software. And then the soul or the spirit would be the user. And I think that's an interesting way to look at it and kind of adding a little bit onto what Fran was saying earlier in chat.
It is interesting. See, again, another way to look at and I'm not going to say it's just nature, or nature via or nature versus nurture. It's each of them is a standalone and yet overlap, if mm-hmm. that makes sense. So it can be. So I appreciate what you're saying, Michael. I mean, I do. What's she saying here? Oh, we got a little chat going on. And for people who listen in the archives, we sometimes get a very active, a lot of activity in our chat room. And, of course, we're referencing that throughout the program. Mm-hmm. And if you ever get a chance, those who are listening in the archives, please join us. You know, feel free to come on in. It can be a lot of fun. Of course, everybody knows each other pretty well by now and cultivating yeah. our group. And that's, we've been nurturing that for a while. Sometimes we get some new folks in here. Other times it's, you know, some people, they disappear for a while, like Fran, but she comes back and says, oh, I moved to another state, you know.
Yeah.
And, but again, we're keeping up with just some of the activity in the chat room. And Wendy is quite the cook, and she's talking about the spirit of autumn. She has some cranberry orange and cinnamon goat cheese with crackers, if anybody would like some. So, you know how, and that would be a nurturing kind of element. And of course, that's
very
really
much so.
That's quite seductive, Wendy. Bring everybody to come to your house.
If only we're in that neck of the woods. But just hearing it said aloud, I can almost taste it. It's delicious.
Truly. And she's quite the cook if you ever find her on Facebook. That's amazing. And so we have some other comments. Fran saying, mustn't forget the programmer who writes the software program that runs the hardware. Absolutely true.
Very interesting. I think the greatest question is that who wrote the software?
Mm. Yeah, and what's the intent?
Mm.
You know, I'd like to point something out that I'm in this course right now, and one of the discussions, of course, is profiling your personality and et cetera. And what came up today was extroverts versus introverts and where you are on the scale. And I'm more introverted. Oddly enough, it's true. kind of assessed is that I can spend a lot of time alone. The other people who are extroverted, all admittedly, need other people to feel energy. They don't like spending time alone. And and of this group, there's a dozen in this group, and we're doing it via Zoom, by the way. I'm the only one who scored a high introvert. And I was thinking about it, and then later I was talking to a friend of mine, and we're about the same age, and I said, you know, I wonder if it's our age. And she said, you know, I think you're right. Part of it is, and I'm getting to a point here about cultivating and nurturing, is that She was 6, I was 8 when we got a television. And we would spend a lot of time alone. You had to entertain yourself, find mm-hmm. things to do, a lot of creativity. In a lot of cases, there wasn't a great social network. You know, you were learning how to be okay with yourself and your own company. And we live in a culture now that you're entertained from birth, pretty much.
Yeah.
Everything is entertainment. So it's like that dopamine in the brain and needing that stimulation. It's very hard for people to be alone. At least this is what I am told. So how we've normalized that, people now think that, well, you're an extrovert, you're a natural extrovert versus you're a natural introvert. And I'm thinking during this whole group discussion that, and again, just listening and observing, and I'm thinking about how much people have just nurtured themselves to need others for entertainment. It has nothing to do with them being extroverts. It has to do with they can now justify something. Well, I need people to feel energy, you know, and when I'm alone too long, you know, then I get tired and I'm depressed and I'm thinking, find something to do, you know. And so it's a fascinating element to this discussion in that how we have normalized certain things that we don't really know what's a nurture versus nature.
Right. Well, that's kind of the conditioning that's inherent in society that you you undergo without even realizing it. It's just part of the, you know, the power of the culture that we're born into. And it's always going to be a give and take. It's always going to be the individual impacted by the overall culture and individuals who change that culture. It's just like the nurture versus nature, or nurture via nurture concept, you know, in a kind of a sociological scale. But
Fran just said, she says, I think it changes with your experiences as you go along. I totally agree with that, Fran. And if you're self-aware and working on yourself, like there was some point that came up of my, apparently how I'm categorized in this thing, which I'm just kind of snickering to myself. But it says, you know, for all the great things I am, I'm also argumentative. And I piped up and I said, I got over that. And of course, I'm the oldest one in this group, so they don't really know what to do then. She said, oh, yes, you know, we work on ourselves. But because it does change with time and maturity and life experiences and so on. Wendy's saying also that she has done one of these assessments also, and she came in at about the middle. She's both, but she likes her alone time, but she also likes people. And I think that that's a good thing to be. I wished I was a little more extroverted. But, you know, it's okay. I'm good with where I am. I was, Dr. Andrew said she was more social when she was younger. So was I.
Yeah.
So
I was the exact opposite. I was an incredibly introverted, you know, young person. And it wasn't until I got into my 20s that I became more extroverted. And, you know, I would say, to your point earlier, talking about how technology has changed our society and we need to be constantly entertained, I think it's easier now than ever to be an introvert. You can be so easily entertained by yourself. You know, I grew up as an only child, and this kind of touches on something that Dr. Stephen said in chat. If birth order is a factor, firstborns have no, you know, sibling role model to fall in the role, in a model of. But I was an only child, so I had, you know, when I wasn't with friends, I had a lot of time on my hands and had to kind of use my imagination. And I got very comfortable at being, you know, just by myself and doing my own thing.
Yeah.
And with the just, but you are right about entertainment. We have a constant stream of entertainment that makes it a lot easier to not be around other people. We have, you know, a plethora of television shows, cinema, books, you know, have been never more accessible than they are now. The digital medium has provided so much, and we have such a library of things to choose from. It's almost like you look at this massive you know, library of things that you could pick and choose from to learn, yeah. to watch, and it's almost like, well, I don't want to do any of it. There's just too much to choose from, which is an interesting thing about the nature of humanity.
Well, already Wendy and Stephen are saying they were the eldest in their family, and both are introverts and consider, you know, themselves in that way. I'm the eldest of four also, and I'm really comfortable being on my own with mm-hmm. myself. So it's not to say we don't need social kind of interactions. It's just that for me, it's in small doses.
Right.
I might, while we're talking about, you know, this dopamine thing and needing entertainment, I'm going to insert here, if anybody hasn't seen it on Netflix, it's called Social Dilemma.
Hmm.
And it's an excellent documentary on how the internet and these guys who built social media are now lobbying for ethics. And it's fascinating. You want to know how your information is used, that you are the commodity. Do you want to understand how it all works on the internet? Watch this documentary. Absolutely mind-boggling. The one thing they all agree on is do not give your children social media, at least until high school.
Yeah, I would very much agree with that. I'd say don't give your children social media ever because it's almost god-awful, but but that's just me. I tend to avoid Facebook and things like that. I just kind of, I don't know. It, you know, for me, I have a hard time with just that constant need to be connected and to see everything, especially when it was around, you know, election times. It became difficult to see some of the more painful opinions of others. But that being said, kind of back to the overall topic at hand, is it's just that I think we have
it's
to...
nature.
Well, I was about to say...
It's nature. Go ahead.
I was just about to say kind of the nature of being the human animal, we have to understand ourselves and kind of understand the give and take of it. We do have things that we're predisposed to. We have things like bias that we're predisposed to as a human animal. But through nurture, through education, through, you know, kind of, software upgrades to Fran's metaphor earlier, we can overcome that nature, like inherent bias.
I agree. One thing that I write about in Metaphysical Parenting is that, in my view, everyone is born with their own distinct nature.
Hmm.
And again, to me, that spirit joins with the DNA, the organics, to make a mind. And the mind isn't the brain. The mind is your overall consciousness and how that consciousness experiences itself in an organic form. What happens is it starts to characterize itself by the outside stimuli, mom and dad, and how your character then and how you're going to express yourself begins to develop.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, what does happen as you get more into the world, go to school, etc., is that out of your nature and how you've characterized, you're developing a personality, and that personality is a very small sliver of the pie. And what people then get the idea that their personality is who they are. And that's not the who, that's what you are. it's the pieces of yourself that you express to get along with the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to know who you are, it's go back to understanding your very basic nature and how you have built your character, you know, as a result of that nature, your, you know, early childhood, you know, the kind of family, you know, that basic thing, and then how you went out into the community and what you're expressing from that. Once you make that better distinction, then there's less need for validation from the outside world about your personality. That's my take on it, because you're much more than you'll ever be able to express to the world. And more importantly, the world doesn't care. The banker doesn't care that you have a dog, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Your boss doesn't care that somebody is sick at home, and it's but you're only able to express that little small sliver of yourself. That's your personality. So it's not to get lost in personality, thinking that's the sum of who you are. And that's why when I take these little personality tests, I mm-hmm. chuckle, because it's just how I'm getting along in the world.
Right.
Those are my expressions. I know who I am inside, and there's so much I am not going to talk about with these people, and they'll never know about me because it's not important. Certainly it's not important under the circumstances. So that to me is how, you know, your own distinguishing your own nurture versus your own nature,
mm-hmm.
if you will. So that if that helps anybody with the tool to say, well, who am I? You know, what is my nature? How have I been nurtured? And how am I nurturing myself? And what part of myself am I nurturing? What parts do I want to change? Well, you know, I'm not going to change the fact that I have hazel eyes even if I wear contacts that are a different color, it doesn't change the fact that I have hazel eyes.
Right.
You know, that's not going to change. So, I don't know, just something I wanted to throw in there.
Well, that's a great point.
Yeah.
And
so what am I missing in the chat here, Michael? I hope you've been keeping up on this here.
Oh,
lots of chatter.
It has been a lot of chatter. I've been looking through a lot of talk about siblings, how people have been growing up. We have a social media conversation going on. It's a good chat. Mm. It's a good chat, you know.
Good.
And it's the very concept of the internet and online social medias. It exemplifies our nature as the human animal of needing social interaction, even introverts. There's a reason that prolonged periods of social isolation of, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? They do it in prison where you get sent in solitary confinement.
Mm. Mm.
And it's considered torture in a lot of ways because the mind begins to crumble when you have no social interaction for days on end. It's very perilous to your psyche. Mm. And it's because we are social creatures. We are the human animal. We need social interaction. Even introverts need a minimum level of it, even if it's just, you know, interacting with people on a bare minimum level. You still get something back from it as a human animal. It mm-hmm. engages you.
I agree. B.F. Skinner did, I think it was back in the 1930s, did conditioning and used his own daughter. She was raised in a glass box for the first 2 years of her life. She is still alive, as far as I know. I should look it up sometime. But she's talked about how that impacted her. What he did is it was temperature controlled. You know, they'd reach through like you would an incubator and change her diaper and, you know, basic needs. So she had no affection, so to speak, during those first 2 years. And what's so fascinating is that scientists will determine that even monkeys that don't get love in those first early part of their life die. They just shrivel up and die. And so what would happen, you know, when left unto itself? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So we need that kind of, at least to a certain degree, no matter how introverted we are, we still need some kind of interaction. We are social. We're community beings, is what
absolutely.
We are.
Absolutely. You know, being a human being is being both an individual and part of the collective, and that's just unavoidable. And we're going to have constantly these debates between the two variants, you know, people that are claim that, you know, pure individualism is the only way to go, and others that claim that pure collectivism is the only way to go.
Yeah.
It seems to be the two broad debates in our overall society, and I think that the only truth is found in the balance of a mix of the both. We are individuals, and we are part of the collective. The both are true, and we need to respect both. You cannot denigrate the rights of the individual for the benefit of the collective, but at the same time, the individual needs to be mindful of the collective. We all need to exist together.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree. Wendy's asking, why would he do that? or someone do that, meaning B.F. Skinner, and did he go to jail? And of course, he didn't go to jail. I mean, he was
it's renowned. Ethically it was renounced. Horrible.
I know. There were so many things done in the name of medicine and science that are so horrific. We look at it now and just go, oh, how did they get away with that? But yeah. It was one big experiment. And as Dr. Edwards says, in the early 20th century, there were no ethical standards in the research community. And
it's an ongoing process.
Dr. Stevens says, sometimes I think there's no ethics today. I totally agree. I mean, it's for us, it's, you know, with MCHS, it's, you know, those nine principles of belief that if we can just touch in on those, we could easily distinguish what ethics, you know, we would need to look at, and unfortunately, not everybody's a humanitarian. So
it is unfortunate, and it's an ongoing process. We're on a spectrum, and I think, you know, in terms of ethics and morality, as the world over, I think I strongly thought for a long time, I think that we're on an upward trajectory, and that the world is more ethical than it has been. And you beat me to it in the chat. But
but anybody want a card, put your name in. Sorry.
Absolutely. But it's
We like to think we are, Michael. Yeah. And I wonder what goes on sometimes behind the scenes, or what other people, you know, that I think what we are is attempting to be more ethical, but it's also based on what we believe, right? And what's been nurtured in a culture, a society, a religion, you know, and what some people think is right. I just, man, my eyeballs get sore from rolling back, you know. And one thing I've learned is that on Zoom, I have to be really careful, and I have to shut off my video at times, because when people are talking, my face is really expressive. And I go, like, my eyebrows go up, and I'm going, what? No, ooh, I better not let them see me do that.
This is why we turn the cameras off when we do the broadcast.
That's right.
We use Skype.
Yeah, that's right.
But
it's fun. Anyway, we have a lot of names here, Michael.
We do.
So,
you know,
I really appreciated this conversation, and everybody participating has been awesome. So I am writing names as quickly as I can. Let's go with Dr. Angie first. Have you got your cards out, Michael?
I do, and Dr. Angie, I have pulled number 7, self-mastery.
All right.
To know who you are and why you are who you are is self-actualization. To choose and walk your own path is self-determination, giving inner peace. Not allowing others to dictate your behavior is self-control. Remain true to your convictions. This is self-mastery towards the path of self-completeness.
Well, I love that, Dr. Angie. Self-mastery is supported with the 3 of pentacles, 3 of diamonds. Now, I want to say that my old teacher, Magda, bless her, who passed in 1979, would say to me that her teachers believed or considered that to be the church card. And she said, we now consider it to be a place of faith. It's, what is your faith? You know, what do you believe in? What are you honoring? And so that's where I'm going to go with this. That's the first thing that comes into my head, Angie. So in your self-mastery, it's supported with your beliefs, where your faith and your hope is placed, and aspiring to that and becoming all and more and greater, and all that you can be. So there's an awakening here that I feel, and that kind of gives me goosebumps for you. It's exciting.
Nice.
Hope that makes sense. Now,
all right.
Dr. Edward.
All right, Dr. Edward, let's see what we have. We have number 31, sacred obligations.
Okay.
A sacred obligation is a sacrosanct duty that any higher being would render for the highest good of all concerned. Sacred obligations include do no harm, do right, and pay it forward. Uphold individual value, value all life, extend tolerance and equality, control and change only what one is entitled to control and change, evolve and grow as a human being with higher awareness, promote knowledge, not fear, and more. Continue to aspire to your highest good by recognizing and fulfilling your sacred obligations.
Well, Edward, the Chariot, I don't know if it gets more empowering than that. It's you're moving forward, you're in balance of the negative and the positive, and you're now, I feel like, embarking on something that has you fulfill your obligations to yourself and others, or what you want to put yourself into, a sense of purposefulness, if you will. And I also right away feel that it's regaining a voice somehow, feeling comfortable with your voice or having articulated something in a new way, and you're feeling really confident about that. So I say move forward. Keep moving forward just as you are, and, you know, challenge yourself to the new task because you've got this. I like it a lot.
Very nice.
Yeah.
All right. We have
Fran
next.
Fran.
And
yes.
Love the quote, Fran, from earlier in our discussion, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one.
Mm-hmm.
Classic
Star
Trek quote.
Yeah.
But Fran, always love to have you. And today I pulled number 18, evolution.
Okay.
Very nice for tonight's topic, too.
Mm-hmm.
Evolution is the driving force of all life. Change is always afoot. Be aware and participate in the evolution of present energies that change situations. Resistance to change is born from fear of losing control. Resistance to change prolongs discomfort. But fear not, personal growth and enlightenment are sure to result in the wake of your own evolution and that of life around you. Thus, entropy is lowered.
You know, friend, this is moving to me, what I'm seeing here, the moving, emotionally moving, the Ace of Cups, the Ace of Hearts in a regular deck of playing cards, your evolution, it's like your heart is refilling. And so this fulfillment, this, but it's emotional, spiritual. So where your heart has been lacking, it's now refilling. And that's why I feel it's moving. It's like there's been tremendous healing and your heart is ready, you know, and taking yourself into the world ready to receive love as well as to give it. It's really profound. So, you know, friend, I got this distinct feeling. The changes that you have made in your life recently are hugely positive. And you're on a brand new path. So it's exciting to see your heart open in your own evolution now. It's awesome.
I love it. All
right. Wendy, I think, is next.
And Wendy, I pulled wild card number one, Paradox. Mm. Long time listeners know this is my a personal favorite. Let's see. A truth can be found in seemingly contradictory ideas. What may seem like a false proposition can be a set of new ideas and ways of thinking. Your solution may lay in the opposite direction than you think. Keep in mind that the cosmos works in equals and opposites. Not all truths lay in common opinions. This may be a time for contrarian thinking and opening your mind to what may not make sense at first, and thus new perspectives are discovered.
Well, the Emperor, you know, that's that power authority figure again. It may not be all that you think it is, you know, and be willing to look at things from different angles and deal with people, especially people who believe they're authority figures, in a new way. And sometimes you have to entertain people. That's what I want to say to you. Sometimes it's you can lighten things up and direct people's thinking even if they're, even if you're a subordinate to them, you know. So it's that's getting along, making it more on a level playing field, and making, I guess, bringing out the humanity in it. So be willing to look at things a little bit differently. So that's back
it's
to that power
combination
thing again, Wendy. Yeah, it is. It is.
And I can only imagine.
Sorry.
I was just going to say, I can only imagine that Wendy wields vast authority and influence through her delicious cooking.
Yeah, she could just cook for her boss, man. She could just win them over. And thanks for the feedback, everybody, and appreciate that. She said she's done that lately. That's fun. And she agrees, Dr. Vicky. Thanks for the feedback. Because we're over here, and again, we can't see you. You can't see us, so... Stephen says he wondered why we didn't do Skype or didn't do visuals and only did this audio thing. It's anyway.
We'll all get on Zoom together.
Yeah, we could. We could.
We have.
Let's move on.
Yeah, we have Audra next, I believe.
We do.
All right. And let's see. Audra, we have another wild card. Wild card number 4, unknowable. There are mysteries in the universe. Not all can be known or predicted. A focus of deliberate intent can reveal valuable unforeseen knowledge for what lay ahead. Remember, we only see what we know and believe. The universe is unfolding in ways that are unknowable to your existing ways of thinking. Change your mind and you change your world. Change your mind and what was once unknowable may now be knowable. Listen to the subtle leadings and in citations of your higher self. What was once unknowable is now knowable. Remain flexible and open to change.
Well, the first thing that I'm feeling here, Audra, is that you're changing some of your belief systems. That's what I want to say. But you've got the Two of Clubs here as well. And you're looking into the future with through new eyes. And so, you know, it's always a good thing to change what you believe. You know, it's like it starts to not make sense, and in your own evolution, we'll use that word here, say, you know what, that doesn't work for me anymore. Wow. Well, I used to believe that. I don't think so anymore. And then you start to see your future differently. And that's what I'm seeing here, is what was once unknowable is more knowable because you're changing your view. And I do see some opportunities in front of you. Keep your eyes open, your ears open, and watch for all those little clues, things that you may not have paid attention to before. And there's some, then that's when the really good stuff is going to start to open up again. Hope that makes sense.
All right, very good. And I believe our final card, if I'm reading this correctly, is Ronaldo.
I think so.
All right. And we have number 9, empowerment. Taking your power back is literally all-powerful and absolutely priceless. It alone is the solution and principle for virtually every problematic circumstance in your life, from a bad relationship to spiritual harassment. Retaining your power means to retain your wholeness. When you are whole, you are empowered. Empower others by doing no harm and doing right. Sharing the best of yourself is encouraging and uplifting to yourself and others.
Well, in support of empowerment, I have the Six of Hearts in tarot language. That's the Six of Cups, Ronaldo. And how I'm going to interpret this is about family and community. And it's like you're certainly... doing your part, bringing your part to it, but you might feel a little bit lost at the moment, like getting lost in the shuffle. So this is about reclaiming who you are so that you bring all of yourself, you know, to your family and to others. I hope that I've said that clear enough. It's, you know, we can't give the shirt off our back because then we get pretty cold. You can only give away what you have.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just feeling here it's time maybe, Ronaldo, to just have some R&R time, you know, a little bit of time out for yourself. Gather your spirits, so to speak, and reignite yourself so that you don't feel like your spirits are in all different directions kind of thing. Because that's, going forward, that's what you want to do, I think. It's my feeling here. So you have so much to contribute, but life may have gotten away, or worry may have gotten in the way, you know, stress, those things, and just, you know, shake it off and, you know, really get back into knowing yourself, and you've got this. You do.
Very good.
Okay.
All right.
And let's see here.
I had just gone through chat. I believe that is everybody.
And I don't know. We got some talk about here about moose.
The geographic location of moose, or plural meese, I can only imagine is correct.
That's funny.
But
is it mices? I know.
But no,
I
it's
think
been
it's just,
yeah.
I think it's just friendly chatter in there now. So
I'm glad to hear that Ronaldo said very accurate. And
oh, good. This.
We always like to get that kind of feedback. And you know, a lot of these, you know, especially on my part in the inner oracle cards, a lot of it's just to kind of get you to think. And a lot of these cards, when we pull them, it makes me think too. It makes me think about the questions that I've been dealing with from day to day. It makes me think of them in a different light when I read these cards. So, you know, another aspect of these weekly gatherings and this community that we're building that I enjoy so much is being able to go through these cards, and especially getting your take, Dr. Hunter, with the tarot cards and kind of getting that insight, which so often turns out to be very incredibly accurate, which is fascinating unto itself.
Well, thanks, Michael. I'll say this. The cards mean what they mean in a way, but they can have many variables. The same with the inner oracle cards. It means what it means to you, because that's the way you're perceiving it. And then there's that other intuitive sense, you know, that I don't know where I got that thought, but I'm going to go with it because we're plugged in. And that's that quantum entanglement that we, you know, have talked about so much of in the past, and part of why we're here in a metaphysical community to, you know, pursue these discussions and open our minds to all kinds of stuff. And that's what this does. And it certainly, it feeds me, although I can stay in my own house. <It's good>. My introverted self can stay home. And but I enjoy these evenings with you, Michael, and everybody in the chat, and I'm really grateful for that. I know we're going to have a next week or the
week
after?
Week after. Yeah, we happen to land on the 30th next week. So we're going to have another fascinating, exciting topic to tune into. We're not sure what it is yet, but it's going to be great.
It will be. We know
it's going to be the best ever.
Now, if anybody, and please, we're going to just remind everybody, if you have anything that you'd like to talk about, you know, throw it in the chat when we come on the air next week, or fire us an email.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And if it's one of those things that we can do a little research for, all the better. Make us work. It's good.
Well, I don't know about us.
Not too hard.
No, it's always great to sink your teeth into a fascinating topic. It gets the mind going. It gets, you know, kind of the, you know, your passion for life going when you think about the mystery that is out there. And that's why I enjoy these discussions. And thank you, everybody, for kind of hanging with us a little bit longer than normal tonight. We went a little long. And I had apparently more ranting and mindless raving in me than I thought tonight. So I appreciate y'all joining us.
Yeah, I think it's great. You know, the time goes by so quickly, Michael, and I think everybody agrees with that. And if people had somewhere better to be, they would all just disconnect it. So I like to think everybody wants to be here, so that's good.
Well, thank you for joining us. To those in the archives, thank you for joining us. We always appreciate you as well, and love to have you in the live chat. But until next week, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.